When I watch TV shows, see the memes, and scroll through social media, it seems like everyone everywhere is saying motherhood is inconvenient. Motherhood is dysfunctional. Motherhood is a chain. Motherhood is no personal time. Motherhood is giving up on my dreams. But all these messages leave out that motherhood is beautiful, connected, life-giving, nurturing, listening, persevering, meaningful, tender, strong, and true. Motherhood is hard, for sure. But from the moment you hear your child's heartbeat through every season, motherhood is, and always will be, worth it.
Listening to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. On this podcast, we aim to bring you inspirational stories and conversation, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we seek to restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm your host, Ramil Tenney, Education Director at the Federation, and joining me is my co-host and Executive Director, Maria Gallagher. Welcome, Maria.
It's great to be with you today, Ramil.
It's always great to have you. And we've had a very pleasant and fun weekend, which we will get into a little bit. But first, I want to introduce what we're going to be talking about today. Today, we are going to address a little talked about topic within pro-life circles. We know that October is celebrated as Respect Life Month, but this month is also dedicated to awareness around pregnancy and infant loss. And we will be talking to a pioneering ministry that has helped families heal through the loss of a child of any age and circumstance. And during Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, this ministry invites people to consider how their response to loss shapes their outlook on the dignity and value of human life. But before we go into that interview, we have a few updates, and here's Maria to give us a little sneak peek into our annual Celebrate Life banquet that happened last Saturday.
Thank you so much, Ramil. Because there's always a reason to choose life, the slogan of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation proved to be the underlying theme of the 2024 Celebrate Life banquet held in Hershey, Pennsylvania this past weekend. Cable news host, best-selling author, and military veteran Pete Hegseth invoked that theme during his touching talk. Hegseth credited his grandmother and mother with being responsible for his standing before the crowd of hundreds of pro-life advocates. In his dynamic speech, Hegseth weaved together the concepts of family, faith, and freedom to create a tapestry which truly celebrated life. The evening also included an emotional moment when former Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation Executive Director Michael Chicochopo received the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Lifetime Achievement Award. Chicochopo, who led Pennsylvania Pro-Life for an incredible 21 years, is the firstborn in a family of 15 children. He gave up a successful career in hospital administration to labor full-time in the pro-life movement and never looked back. National Right to Life President Carol Tobias and Assistant Political Director Andrew Baer were among the distinguished guests at the banquet, which raised money for the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation Education Fund. The Education Fund, through its partnership with the website teenbreaks.com, has reached more than 800,000 teens with life-saving, life-changing information. In the end, the banquet had the feel of a giant family reunion, where everyone from a 9-day-old baby to seasoned grandparents came together to honor the dignity and priceless value of human life. It was an absolute joy to MC this phenomenal event, which underscores the critical importance of the pro-life movement in Pennsylvania. Ramil.
Thank you, Maria. And I have to say, it was spectacular. And One of the things that Maria mentioned to you right now is something that has been a project that is dear to us at the Federation, which is we promote a site called teenbreaks.com, which is geared towards educating teenagers on abortion and alternatives to abortion. And so this week for our inspiration, I decided to share some stories from this project. And I want to give a quick shout out to Betty, our co-worker, who pulled up some testimonials on what some of our readers or some of the teen audiences that came onto the site had to say. Now, here's two of the testimonials that that we were able to pull out. Now, this is what Stacy, a high school student, had to say. She says, "I came to teenbreaks.com to research abortion for a speech I had to do for school. I started off thinking that I was going to do my speech on pro-choice, believing that abortion was not bad. Teenbreaks.com changed my whole perception on abortion. After seeing the aborted babies and how the mothers felt afterward, I decided to do my speech on pro-life. After my speech, a classmate came up to me and told me she was pregnant and thinking about getting an abortion until she heard what abortion really was like. I made a difference in the life of my classmate, and I want to thank teenbreaks.com for helping me see the reality of abortion. Because of this site, another life was saved." Wow, that's just incredible. We're talking about high school students reaching out to other high school students. And Stacy, what a wonderful testimony, because through her intervention, through her desire and curiosity to know about this issue, she was able to save another life. Now, here's another story. This is Chelsea, who shares about her experience with the site, not in recent times, but about 10 years ago. She says, "I was just on Facebook defending my pro-life stance when someone said that 16-year-old girls should not be subject to going through pregnancy and parenthood, and abortion is better for both the baby and the mother, and the mother would lose opportunities for education and work. Well, I have an 8-year-old. I gave birth when I was 15. I am a 24-year-old working nurse, and his argument was demolished. Then I remembered being a scared 15-year-old girl who sobbed two pink lines, and when trying to find information to end my pregnancy before my parents found out, I stumbled across the teenbreaks.com site. This site saved me from committing murder and saved my daughter. She's a gymnast now, is very outgoing, fashionable, and loves Sunday school. God does not make mistakes." Thank you to these two incredible women who shared with us what Teen Breaks has done in their lives. Now, if you have teenagers who are curious about the issue of abortion, pass on this valuable resource that can help bring awareness to them in their language. Now, on to our guest. Kelly Bro, along with her husband, Ryan Bro, is the founder of Redbird Ministries, a nonprofit organization that specializes in compassionate support infused with the Catholic faith for those who have experienced child loss of any age and circumstance. This ministry sprung from having suffered the loss of their own children and being met with silence from the world around them. Kelly is a published author and expert in the field of child loss grief as president of Redbird Ministries, and she has worked exclusively with the lost community for 6.5 years, serving over 500 families personally and thousands through the programming developed by Redbird Ministries. She's an advocate for change in supporting the lost community, having played a strategic role in implementing support in over 30 communities and training 100 leaders across the country. Thank you, Kelly, for joining us to have this very important discussion today.
It is a pleasure. I'm honored to be here today.
You started off, I mean, when I went on your site, it was your own story that kind of propelled you and your husband to begin this ministry. Can you tell us a little bit about the ministry, what you do, and how do you help parents who have suffered an intimate loss like that of a child?
So it was actually 19 years ago today. Today's our twins' birthday. I delivered them at only 28 weeks, so my placenta abrupted, so they had to take them very emergently. So I was wished off to the OR, and they were born alive by the miracle of God. But my son developed an infection in the NICU, and at 15 days old on October 31st of 2005, he passed away. And at the time, it was very traumatic. I had to, we had to go to the church to be able to bury our child. But at the time, I really couldn't grieve because his sister was still in the NICU. So she spent 89 days in the NICU and came home on oxygen and 10 different medicines. So I was a scared 25-year-old responsible to take care of, my child, which it was a very hard time in our life and in our marriage. But this beautiful little gift of life was, she was our child and she brought so much joy and we were able to love on her. But unfortunately, in 2009, because she was considered immunocompromised, she contracted H1N1 and 1 month shy of her fourth birthday, she died. And I explained that time for myself and my family. It's like the world opened up and I fell in. It was a very, very hard time in my life and in my marriage. It wasn't until 2017 when my husband and I both, about a year apart, made our crucio, where God really shined a light into that, our story. And I realized that there was so much anger and hurt that in my life, and that I really had to allow God to come in and to restore this brokenness and to deepen my relationship with Him. And about a year later, after my crucio, that was Redbird was born out of the crucio movement, because Father Ted told us to go and to serve the church, like you've been given freely, and freely you give. And so that is exactly what we did in our own diocese. But I never really understood before of how when you give God your yes, He will magnify it. And here He is today, magnifying our yes. I was a real estate agent before. I was never served in the church, never did any work in parishes, was never involved in the pro-life movement. Yet this work, our loss, really brought us to an understanding of how when we serve and support those that are in need, that it really is building a culture of life. And so that's what Redbird really is about helping, the world, the culture, to see the gift of life in those that are wanted. And, and some, sometimes in the sad situation of abortion, that we have to help people to see that their lives were of value and that they were gift, even if, they returned home to the Lord way sooner than we would have liked and hoped.
What was your journey to healing like?
It was hard. It was really, really hard. And I think the reason why it was really, really hard is because people don't want to talk about these hard topics. And there was no support in our church parish. So they walked with us through the funeral and burial. And then we really, really never heard from anyone again. And that was very hard, because we felt like when we needed the church the most, the church was silent. And they were not there for us. And that was hard, because that forced us really to find healing in the secular world, which of course is out God. And anything without God, it makes a sense of hopelessness. Like there's no hope, like this never will get better. Like you hear these unholy vows that you say, but it's because that truth is not being spoken to you and over you. And I really needed someone to do that for me. That to advocate for me, for on my behalf, when I had no words, I needed the words of others who had gone before me.
So Kelly, now that you're on the other side, I want to ask you, what's one thing that you would like well-meaning folks to know about pregnancy loss?
We hear every day these words, "I was only," or "I was just," and it comes even from families of loss, or from others, from our families, "you are only," or "you are just." And these words, "only" and "just," have the ability to be counterproductive to the pro-life movement. Because there is no "only" and there is no "just" when a baby dies. Your baby just died. and families are experiencing the devastation of their hopes and dreams for their life and for their child. And they're having to pick up, you know, the pieces and lean in on God. And sometimes, you know, it's the first time they question. So
it is definitely a struggle that the church needs to rise up and address.
Absolutely.
Moving on, what is the appropriate way to respond to someone who is suffering from pregnancy or infant loss?
I think the appropriate response to anyone is simply, I'm sorry that your baby died, and I'm here for you if you want to share about your baby.
Oh, that's very, that is something a lot of people don't think about, I feel like. But then we also have been seeing families that really want to honor the life of their baby, even if your baby lived a few days outside of the womb, or a few hours, or a few minutes. Now, can you tell us a little bit more about how you help families honor this little precious life that they had for however short a time that they did? How can we as a society, and as well as parents who are going through this, how can we honor that little precious life?
Yeah, it's beautiful that you brought that up, because now I think is the time. The generations have shifted where our younger families do want to talk about this, and they do want to honor their babies. Some great things to do, especially for a family immediately, any type of, we usually recommend like any type of keepsake. My husband bought me a little heart, and it has two little pink gemstones, and I wear it often to remember them and to remind them every year on their anniversary. I go and refresh their flowers, and our family goes, and you know, we've done balloon release in the past, we've gone to mass, we've, you know, done prayers. We've also, you know, talk about them and share their memories and the impact of their life, because even though, you know, they were only here for a short time, the impact of their life has a tremendous effect on our family and our community. Hence Redbird, like their impact on our lives gave birth to this ministry. And so there's ways to keep their memory alive and to remember them. I also have, we had two pregnancy losses after the twins died. I have a little card that says Eva Catherine and Christian Ryan, and it has Forever Loved on it. So it's just a way to recall to mind, to remember to ask for their intercession and their prayers, and just to remember their beautiful little lives.
What is the biggest misconception that you see about miscarriage and infant loss?
The biggest misconception is that it is not common. 1 in 4 pregnancies ends in miscarriage. It's very, very common. There's 133 babies every day that are diagnosed with a not with compatible life diagnosis. 1 in 2, I think it's 1 in 217 babies die before their first month of life. It's very, very common. 1 in 250, I think, stillbirths. So that misconception is that it's not common. We don't talk about it. There's a silent stigma around it, but it is common, and it's happening every day. And it's very likely that you know someone who has experienced this loss.
And a lot of women and families do want to keep it private, but sometimes because of, I mean, we still need a family and a society, a village around us. And when they do share, what are some things we should not say to the women who have just experienced a miscarriage? I think it's just and only was one thing that you brought up, but then there are also other things that we might just not have the tools and the language to speak into grief, because it's been taboo. We have not talked about it very much. What are some things that you feel we should not be saying to a couple that has experienced this?
Don't ever say you can have more children, because that diminishes and downplays what they're living through, this reality right now, that that baby's life had dignity, inherent dignity. and that we should not diminish that the dignity of that little life. We should also not push people into moving on with something that they're not ready. We have a Paschal mystery for a reason. Good Friday happened, Holy Saturday happened, and Easter Sunday. We should not push people to Easter Sunday, you know, for something that they're not ready. People have to sometimes lament and to be in that suffering and to process that, because that is, grief is the natural response to death. It is, it's natural to experience this wealth of tears. And it also is not everybody's reality. Like, they might not have another child. Some people really face a lot of infertility around pregnancy loss. And so that's not also their reality. And it also doesn't make the grief go away even if they get pregnant again. Sometimes it exasperates it, because hormones can do a number of things on how we feel, our thoughts and our emotions. So sometimes it makes the situation worse.
And I have to ask, how did you come up with the name Redbird?
So part of my journey of back to my relationship and my faith with God was, I had a friend who experienced the loss of her 10-year-old. They were hit in an drunk driver hit them, and her daughter Isley was 10 years old when she died. And my friend Misty brought me back to my faith, really. She was the one who invited me as a parent of loss to explore my relationship with God again. And one of a local singers in our area wrote a song called Redbird Flies. Sweet Cecilia, that author of that song, was Laura Huval. And it was in memory of people in her life that every time she saw a cardinal fly, a redbird, that she would remember them. And it's that tradition that we, when we see a cardinal, we think of our loved ones, because God is present in nature too.
Well, that's beautiful. And I just wanted to shift gears a little bit here, because we as a pro-life movement, we're hearing a lot of misinformation about surrounding miscarriage. Especially because in the medical field, miscarriage is, it has been associated with the word spontaneous abortion. And we see that happening all around us. We see celebrities sharing their experiences and calling it an abortion. Now, what do you think, it is important that pregnancy loss to miscarriage not be conflated with an abortion, with the willful act of ending a child's life?
Yes. So if we believe that language matters, this speaks right into that. Like, calling it spontaneous abortion is a terrible, it also is very traumatic to families who receive their super bill from the hospital after a DNC and see these words. It happened to me. And I think it caused a lot of anger with, you know, with the idea that someone would choose this. So there was a definite brokenness in my own heart with just even, you know, leaning into, you know, the abortion, like helping people not to choose abortion, because it was heartbreaking to me. And it's something that I've questioned we live in Louisiana. I've questioned my own senators and legislative community to see if we can change these codes. If you have a code in the medical field for a broken toe on your right foot, you can have a different code for someone who has experienced a miscarriage. We can have, if they have found compassionate language surrounding every single type of miscarriage, you know, an ectopic pregnancy, a molar pregnancy, a chemical pregnancy, a miscarriage, all these things that our medical community has adopted to help to have more compassionate language while they are serving these families, then our codes can follow too. And I think sometimes, probably more often than we realize, it probably gets commingled with some of these numbers where people are thinking it's more acceptable than it really is. You and I know both that that can happen.
Yes, and it's important to draw the clear distinction between a miscarriage and an abortion. A miscarriage is a terrible event. It's very traumatic. It's very tragic. But it is not willed by a doctor, and it is not the intentional killing of a child, which is what abortion is. And so there's a distinction between the two, and we need to always recognize that because that can have implications for our laws and our government programs and the way we deal with these various situations. So in the couple of minutes we have left, can you tell us where our listeners can go to learn more about your work and to get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to our website at redbird.love, L-O-V-E, at the top of the screen, there's a banner that'll say Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. There's a lot of information on there that's surrounding pregnancy and infant loss and ways to get connected to support these families in need and just to give yourself more understanding. Because I think if the world educates themselves around this specific topic, that we can see how sometimes like we can help to build a culture of life in the way that we support these families.
And in the minute we have left, can you say, Kelly, what brings you hope?
Yeah, so I am just super hopeful how our younger generations really want to talk about these things, because through no, I think, direct understanding, that they are helping us to build a culture of life. So there is great hope that, you know, time is shifting, that, you know, we're just calling to mind and elevating the life message in the world.
Thank you so much, Kelly, for being on Positively Pro-Life podcast today. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. God bless.
We've been speaking with Kelly Breaux, who, along with her husband, Ryan Breaux, is the founder of Redbird Ministries, a nonprofit organization that specializes in compassionate support infused with the Catholic faith for those who have experienced child loss of any age and circumstance. Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all across the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Keystone State, with nearly 40 local county-based chapters. We shine a spotlight on the most vulnerable individuals, from the very dawn of life to the twilight of life. Thank you for joining us for the program today. It wouldn't be the same without you. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.